On this first day of December 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, General History, Chapter 28, entitled Jnana Yoga, text number 3. Tajase Nindriyapanne Pindasto Nashtachetanaha Mayam Prapnoti Mrityumva Tadvannanartadrikpuman. Translation. Just as the embodied spirit soul loses external consciousness when his senses are overcome by the illusion of dreaming or the death-like state of deep sleep, so a person experiencing material duality must encounter illusion and death. Purport. The material senses are described here as tajasa because they are born of the false ego in the mode of passion. Impelled by false ego, one dreams of the material world without the personality of Godhead and makes plans to lord it over nature to exploit her resources. Modern atheistic scientists have developed this false ego to a fine art and imagine themselves great heroes conquering the obstacles of nature and moving forward toward inevitable omniscience. Such dreamy materialists are repeatedly stunned by the crushing reactions of the laws of nature, and their arrogant agnostic civilizations are repeatedly annihilated by world wars, natural disasters, and violent shifts of the cosmic situation. On a simpler level, all conditioned souls are captivated by sex attraction and thus bound to the illusion of material society, friendship, and love. They imagine themselves to be wonderful enjoyers of the material nature, which suddenly turns against them and kills them, just like the tamed animals that suddenly animal that suddenly turns on its master and kills him. Om jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakya chakshurun miditam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, in the first couple of verses, there was a strong injunction against not praising or criticizing others, if you recall, in the last couple of days. And this will quickly deviate one from one's own best interest and will become entangled in illusory dualities. So, one may ask, well, wait a minute. You know, first of all, Krishna himself strongly criticizes Namam Dushkritano Mudha Papadyante Namarama. The whole 16th chapter, he's criticizing the demons. In the first verse, he's criticizing those who don't surrender to him. And we find great acharyas, such as Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, having very strong words against the atheists, non-devotees, personalists, smart Brahmins, so many. And the Bhagavatam is full of criticism, if you will, of non-devotees, those who are materialists. The whole huge part of the fifth canto, the chapter on the forest of material enjoyment. So what does this all mean, that one should not praise or criticize? There's also praise, too, and praising devotees, praising all kinds of things like that, the deity. So the idea here, the word used is nindati, first of all, which means blasphemy. You know, that's the word used in the second chapter, second verse. And in the first verse, it was garha, which is also a negative term. And the idea is that, you know, criticizing someone is not in itself wrong. It's a question of the motive. Just as if Mahatattva sees one of you doing some nonsense, and he says, Prabhu, you know, that's an offense. You shouldn't do that. Do it like this. You know, an ordinary person may say, oh, he's criticizing. He's violating the rules of the Shastra. One should remain equipoised. Right? But no, that's a service. That's a service to Krishna and a service to us when we're corrected by authorities, those who are giving, you know, the shastric view of things. So, but the motive, the whole thing is the motive. If one praises others, just like now, we're in this political season, right? It's most of the time, there's some election coming up soon. 2 years from now, or 1 year from now, there'll be a big election. So there's just oceans of glorification and criticism going on. Blasphemy, right? It's all violating this injunction of the Shastra. This is in the mode of their mode of passion and ignorance. People are praising some candidate, some politician, you know. Why? Because they really like him? Because they think that he's a good person, he or she, or whatever? No, because they're thinking that person may win. If I praise them and help them win the election, then I'll get something. I'll get a position, I'll get money, you know, fame like that. And the same thing is going on the other side. So much of the political life is criticizing the opponent, dragging him down. Truth, lies, doesn't make any difference, as long as people believe it, or it has the effect, you know. So it's just an ocean of blasphemy and false glorification, all in the modes of nature. Now, today's verse also is related to that. And this has to do with the activity of the senses. When the senses are overcome by the illusion of dreaming or the death-like state of deep sleep, a person experiences material duality and must encounter illusion, just as the embodied spirit loses external consciousness. So we have these senses, and we have this mind, we have this intelligence. Why? Why do we have all these material things? Because we wanted a situation in which we could forget Krishna and try to be independent. And so we needed, instead of having our spiritual senses, mind and intelligence, which are saturated with Krishna consciousness, the desire to serve Krishna, we've been given these gross and subtle material bodies. Prabhupada compares it to a shirt and coat. You know, the shirt and coat. There's the body in this analogy. The body is the soul in this analogy. The shirt is the subtle body, the material, the mind, intelligence, ego. And the coat are the external senses. You see? So I'm just as I'm not my shirt and coat, I'm also not my gross and subtle bodies. So here it's described that the senses, the material senses, have been produced out of the mode of passion, contacting the false ego. The false ego means I want to enjoy. I need senses if I want to enjoy. So Krishna gives. That's the mode of passion, right? Characterized by uncontrollable material desire and always eager and anxious to work hard in order to get money, in order to buy things that will gratify the senses. This is the characteristic of the mode of passion. So so there's an analogy being drawn here. When the senses are inert, we're asleep, right? So there's two states. We're asleep, we're dreaming, or then there's also deep sleep. So one is compared to the mode of passion. When you lose external consciousness, when the senses are overcome by the illusion of dreaming or the death-like state of deep sleep, person is very material, they must encounter illusion and death. So the deep sleep without dreaming is like death. There's no essential difference. Think about it. You know, in death, you're unconscious. At least for some time, you really have no consciousness. Suppose you're going to be born in a human womb, right? There's actually 6.5 solar months when the Prabhupada always talks about 7 months, but he's talking about the 10-month lunar month gestation period. Well, we know it's 9 months, right? 9 solar months of complete unconsciousness. You're not conscious. You wake up for those last 2.5 months, but you don't have your senses developed, but inside, you're awake. Imagine that sense of being. And you pray. It's described in the third canto. You're praying that you won't forget Krishna next time. But when you're born, you forget everything. And in that environment of, if you're not a devotee in your previous life, you'll be born into a non-devotee family, and you'll be raised as nice atheist or agnostic, forgetting Krishna. And this is how we go on and on and on life after life. So, just as when we fall asleep and we're dreaming, that's illusion. That's like the illusory. And when we're completely unconscious, deep sleep, that's like death. So that's the analogy being given here. Now, it's interesting that this statement of Krishna is that, you know, this world is like a dream. It's a theme coming up again and again in this Uddhava Gita. If you go back, you see again and again we heard that. There's that one verse that just struck me so much, I made a poem out of it. Deyastopi na deyasto vidman svapna yatotataha. Adeyastopi deyasta kumati svapna durgita. Like one awakened from a dream, the wise soul sees the truth. Though dwelling in the body, he's entirely aloof. The foolish soul, however, though he's transcendental too, sees the body as himself as if the dream were true. It's just like one of these light bulb verses. It's like, dehi nos mi yata dehi. So that's exactly what's going on here, is that when we take the body as the self, when we take the mind as the self, when we're absorbed in the endeavor for sense gratification, or thinking about past sense gratification, or future sense gratification, or fearing that this precious body of ours, which is of course ourselves, may come into a danger, you know. All of that is completely, it's just like a dream. It's just like a dream. But, as Krishna will say, I think later in this chapter, when one is fully identified with this, even though it's a dream, you still experience fear, you still experience anxiety, you still experience, overwhelming illusory desire, you know, because you're identifying with this temporary shirt and coat. And so it's very real for you, right? Just like the ordinary person, of course, this is reality. You know, this is reality. Got to go to work. I live in San Diego. You know, there's a big ocean out there, water. You know. But all of that is kind of just this big dream world that's been constructed. It's not that it's unreal. Just like a dream is real on its own terms. I'm having a real dream, a real nightmare, you know, and I wake up sweating and shivering and screaming. What's unreal about it? The emotion is real, but it's not. But it's a reflection. It's not what you think it is. Like the dream is not what you think it is at the time, and when you wake up, you know that, right? You know, it was just a dream. If it was a nightmare, right? But this is also a dream. And the problem is that we take it for reality, and we're completely oblivious, life after life, about artha, real artha. This word artha comes in here. Nana artha drik. This is a key word. It means that which you pay attention to as something valuable, you see. Or in a broader sense, which you pay attention to as something scary. In other words, that is the most important thing for you to do. Is to deal with this external world, its values, you know, that which I can discard, what's interesting, what's not, what's pleasurable, what's painful. Your whole consciousness is absorbed in that. That's illusory energy. That's the illusory energy. So the Bhagavatam, each of these chapters is coming, I think the second to last chapter now of the Uddhava Gita. Krishna's breaking that illusion. I'm listening to lectures every morning, and Prabhupada is right in that section of the second chapter, starting with Shrinvatam Sukata Krishna. You know, if you hear the Bhagavatam, if you hear Krishna Katha regularly, then Krishna within your heart, he cleanses away the unwanted things, the abhadras. And then the verse I chant every morning before class, Nashta Prayesha Bhadreshu. You know, Nityam Bhagavata Sevya, Bhagavadyutta Mashroke, Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. So, just the process of hearing, which is the root of all of the nine processes. Without that, nothing begins. Hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping, serving the lotus feet, making friends, surrendering everything, you know. It all begins with hearing. So, Krishna works from within. He cleanses away. And then you rise above the modes of nature. Tada radastava bhava kama lobadayas cheta eta anabhadam tatim sabbe basidati. So then one becomes transcendental to the modes of nature. You come up to the Brahma-Bhuta platform based on this serious hearing with faith. Shushusho shatadhanasya. With faith and with great attention and submissive oral reception. Then the process works. Now that also pertains to chanting Hare Krishna. There also has to be that deep absorption and faith in the process of japa and the process of kirtan. That's the primary Krishna katha, Sabda Brahma, the holy name. And the cleansing, Chaitra Dapana Marjanam, and one comes up the Brahma-Bhuta platform. And the impingement, if you will, of the dreamlike state is diminished. In other words, what is not overwhelmed with the illusion of this is pleasurable, this is painful, I have to work here, I have to do this, I have to make my way in this world, you know, and this is all there is, you know, that becomes the illusion. Then you see that as the dream, you know. That's what, right in the Gita. That which is awaking for the realized soul is the dream, is the sleeping, dreaming state for the fools, and vice versa. So, there's some nice stuff in this purport. So the modern atheistic scientists, they're completely, you know, they've developed the false ego to the fine art. You know, it's very nice. So what happens is that, you know, however direction you want to go, if you really want to go, Krishna will give you the intelligence to go in that direction, right? The super soul is fulfilling the desires of the atheists and the blasphemers as well. Now, the result is they get cast down, they lose the human form of life. But while they're in their prime, right, they're moving forward. Now, just see the result of that. Just see the result. This, you know, this modern society. I just got, you know, went to Alachua. So we've been flying on these planes for so many years, you know. They don't bother anymore with putting the movies up because everybody's got his device. They're either sitting there with the iPhone or the iPad or the computer. Everybody's watching his own specific movie or something, you know, or listening or whatever, you know, some game. Everyone's on a screen of some size. So, now, what is going on there? First of all, you can see the great illusion. You're flying 32,000 feet in a tin can, right? At any moment, you know, it's all this contraption that these atheist scientists have put it, you know, together. And the whole idea of that cabin and everything is to make you forget, you know, that you're in danger at every moment, right? You're not breathing enough oxygen. I read that they only give 70-75% of the normal oxygen up there because the outside air is very thin. That's not going to help much. So unless they're going to carry these big, you know, oxygen tanks, which are very heavy, to put in, you know, then they're going to reduce. So they're only breathing 70% oxygen. This is why I always feel a little sick on those flights. And longer the flight, the more. And so that's going on. You're you're in the middle of some... You know, dream within the dream within the dream. This is what's happening. And, you know, and if you're fortunate, everything goes fine, and, you know, you come down, you know. But then there's more illusion everywhere you go. And then the great illusion, and just think for a moment about the advancement, quote, of weaponry. You know, there's so many things being developed that we have no idea. These little nanotechnology, you know. Now they have the drones. Well, now they can have little bees going and, you know, and who knows. Or just like surveillance, you know, knowing where you are at every time, you know, what you're saying in your emails and so forth. Attempt to become omniscient. Exactly that. You know, the NSA, they have big field, you know, mile-wide fields that are in which are buried huge computers that are, you know, that are processing all of this information they're getting out. Now, just think of the mentality of the people who are doing this stuff, who are in charge of it. Try to imagine that you had $1 billion to play with, you know? I mean, how many dhotis and kurtas can you buy, you know? So then what happens is, this upper crust, the 1/10th of 1/100th of 1% that has most of the money, you know? What are they going to do with it all? You know, they've crunched down on top of other people's heads in order to get that rich, you know. What are they going to spend? Buy. So there's a whole, industry, luxury industry, to service that, to keep people more and more deeply in illusion. Build, you know, 1,000 temples of Krishna. No. They'll spend $20,000. I was clicking on one here just to see what's going on. It's Christmas time, you know, so all of it, they're coming at you from all directions, trying to make you buy this stuff. The luxury items, you know, $20,000 for a little alligator bag for a woman.
And the alligator eats it.
Can you believe that? And then they had one that was cheaper. It's only $9,000, $9,995, you know. Can you imagine? You know, we have our little bags. We carry our stuff in, you know. What does it cost? You know, 100 rupees, if that. It's adequate. No, but to be stylish, you know. And imagine the anxiety. Oh, my God, she has the 20,000 bag. I only have the $10,000 bag. You see this? This is what's going on. So just as devotees want to refine more and more their devotion, their devotional service, and we have, you know, the more, there's no limit to it. Read the Nectar of Devotion. The amazing variety of emotion that's available, of rasas that are there in relation to Krishna. And the way in which Rupa Goswami, our great acharya, has analyzed them and give us little examples of them, you know, this is incredible. It's lifetimes of investigation and trying to experience that through purification. So there's so much variety of illusion, you know, there is so much variety of the reality, you see, in relation to Krishna. But it's all completely wholesome. That greed and that anxiety for serving Krishna and developing our knowledge of Krishna and relationship with Krishna, that's wholesome. You know, what's the downside? You know, what they call side effect, right? Just like I always like to give the analogy of drugs. I just came from this 24-hour kirtan spread over 2 days. And they had a Friday and Saturday. Now, I wasn't able to stay the whole time. One day I spent 5 hours just for kirtan, you know. Just chanting Hare Krishna. Beautiful kirtaniyas, you know, a lot of the leading ones in the country, the world. And, you know, you get this, what is this? What is going on here? You know, we're just absorbed in this holy name. It's never getting stale, you know. I mean, you may have to eat something or go, you know, take care of the demands of nature or whatever. But you just get, you know, hour after hour. If you focus on it and you chant, you get into it and you're a devotee, it's pleasurable. You know, and we know from reading, and we experience a little bit ourselves, that it can get more and more and more pleasurable, and it's almost like a drug. And indeed, the example is given of intoxication with love of God. That word is used, although toxic is not the right word, but you know the idea. Matta, you know, pramada, and all these different things. So what's going on there? Well, after the whole, you know, 12 hours or 24 hours of chanting, what's the result? Are you hungover? You know, do you need 3 days to go to detox? You know, are you no. You feel healthy and refreshed and, you know, ready to serve Krishna, right? Whereas on the other side, if you have some bender or binge, you know, forgive me, you know, 3 days worth of tweaking, you know, methamphetamine, you just destroyed a good part of your brain, you know, you're in total paranoia, you're broke. In other words, you're going down heavily to the motive ignorance. So, the reflection. It's a perfect, perverted reflection. So, the idea is that we are coming off of our lifetimes of addiction to sense gratification. And it's not easy. It doesn't happen all at once. It requires a slow and steady detox, if you will, and with a good diet, you know, of plenty of kirtan, plenty of service, and all of the program we've been given, and plenty of prasadam, yes, Bhagavad prasadam, and also separation from all of those things that are, you know, that we've been attracted to for so many years. Waking up from the dream. This is exactly what this is all about. And we're constantly getting this, how you can take your ordinary life and learn so much about it, about transcendental life, so much about Krishna, about Krishna consciousness, with some guidance, with the proper guidance from the Shastra like this. Who would ever think that as we, you know, yeah, we go to sleep, we dream, and sometimes we don't dream. Well, that's just the way it is. But now you can learn from this, that this is just as the soul experiencing illusion of this world, and death. It's just like that. In the Lachu, we were studying the prayers of Devaki, Krishna, as he appears as Vishnu, you know, on chapter 3 of the 10th canto, and with Vasudeva and Devaki. And You know, it's pretty technical. We're talking about mahatattva and the pradhan and how, you know, the annihilation. This is the last class I gave, and merging into the, you know, merging into Krishna, the pradhan, and then it's not manifest anymore. It's something, you know, a verse like that. So what do we do with that? How do we apply that in our daily life? Well, we're meant to see the world as like that, you know, that this is... The main understanding is Idam Vishram Bhagavan. There's a word, Idam Vishram Bhagavan Ivetara. This is in the first canto, I believe. One of the instructions of Narada to Vyas. And he says, this world is Bhagavan. Idam Vishram Bhagavan. But Ivetara, it seems to be different. So there's one and different. There's one and difference. But the idea is that wherever we look, we are meant to see Krishna through his energies. Just like if Krishna Kumar leaves his jacket, I know what it is. I know what his sweatshirt is, and I see that jacket. I think, oh, that's Krishna Kumar's. So I'm thinking of Krishna Kumar, right? That's it. Or this paint and plaster, right? In the corner there. Well, I'm looking at it there. I don't think, oh, there's some nice paint and plaster. No, I think, oh, there's Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. I'm seeing because it's been formed by someone who's Krishna conscious in that way. It's just the material energy, but it's been, you know, given a direct remembrance. But we're supposed to get to the point where even our, you know, in acting, going out, where there's nothing that directly reminds you of Krishna, it still reminds you of Krishna because you know you've gotten these ideas and this understanding from the Shastra that this is also Krishna's. Rasoham apsukondeya. What anyone tastes, when anyone drinks water, they're contacting Krishna, but they don't know it. That's the problem. They're thinking it's ordinary water. But we know when we drink Krishna, oh, this is, you know, Krishna. He says, yeah, let me think of Krishna. It's Krishna's sun, it's Krishna's water, it's Krishna's earth, fire, right? All of the elements. And if we're Krishna conscious through the direct processes and we hear the Shastra, and we use as much of this energy in Krishna's service, then we'll always be in Krishna consciousness. That's the ultimate goal, to always be 24 hours in Krishna consciousness. And from there, on that platform, you can experience all these varieties of emotions and rasas in relation to Krishna. Get to that point. So I wanted to share something that you probably haven't heard before. This has to do with the chanting of the holy name. There's so much chanting. But it has to do with the 10 offenses. And this you'll find in this text, I forgot the number now, in the Adi Lila, where Prabhupada quotes from the Padma Purana, the Sanskrit of the 10 offenses, and he gives an explanation. I think it's chapter 7. Anyway, so the first verse has to do with blaspheming devotees. Satam Nindam, right? And is it the second one? Shivasya Shi Namnam. I forget the actual Sanskrit. Of the whole verse. But it has to do with the one when you say to think that the names of the demigods such as Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. So I want you to just think a minute that just as in the Upadesha Amrita, we have those six things that Jahada Piyasascha that impede devotional service, and we have six that foster devotional service, enthusiasm, patience, determination, etc. So on the ones that impede, the six expand into seven, right? Because you have niyamagraha. Niyamagraha can be either neglecting, niyamagraha, I think, neglecting the rules and regulations, or performing them just for the sake of show, not really with any attention, just externally, right? That's two meanings. Similarly, that second verse, beginning Shiva Sashinam, about the demigods, that expands into two more, giving us 12 offenses, and I'll explain. So, this statement, to think they're equal to or independent of, that's actually two different ideas, two different offenses. And it's based on the same thing of the sandhi, niyama agraha, niyama agraha. So, in the last one is dia bindam. You see? The word is dia binnam. And dia binnam can be divided. It means, dia means having the mentality, or intelligence, like dhyana, you know. And binnam means separated, right? So the word is diya bindam, and it can be either together, meaning diya abindam, or diya bindam. And when you have those two, and the word shivasya, it can mean of Shiva, or it can mean the auspicious name of Krishna. So you see how they
are you going to give us the two meanings?
I'm going to give it right now. So here's how it works. So the first one is the name of Shiva, thinking that the name of Shiva, etc., the other demigods, is binna or abinna. Well, it's two opposite things. You see? So the first one, binna, meaning that they're separate, you see, is equal to, or what do we say, the demons are equal to, or
independent.
So the independent is binna, means separate. Means that, oh, I worship Krishna for so many things, I'll go back to Godhead, get prema, but I also have to worship Shiva, Durga, Ganesha, and other things for other things I might need, because Krishna can't give those. They have independent benedictions that they can give me. And this is the classic Hindu hodgepodge, you know. Yeah. The other one is thinking that, oh, you can chant Shiva, you can chant Durga, it doesn't make any difference, you'll get the same thing. That's one. The abhinnam, you see? So they're not, that's the two for Shivasya. Then the other one is, so that's one extra one. Then the other one, which is really important for us, is to think that the auspicious name of Krishna is separate from Krishna himself. And that means that diya bindam, to think it's separate. So to think that the name of Krishna is not fully Krishna is also an offense. You know, we've heard that many times. And you'll find that in that purport. That's the first thing he talks about for explaining that verse, that's an offense to not really have faith that, oh, when I chant Hare Krishna, I'm associating directly with Krishna. So I thought I'd share that with you because we don't often think about that. Any questions or comments on the subject of the verse or anything else? I'll read the translation one more time. Just as the embodied spirit soul loses external consciousness when his senses are overcome by the illusion of dreaming or the death-like state of deep sleep, so a person experiencing material duality must encounter illusion and death. So we should try to rise above the duality of this world. Okay, one quiz before we end. Krishna says, at the end of the seventh chapter, that everyone is overwhelmed by the delusion of duality. Right? Who can give the verse? Icha samutena sarvabhutani sammoham yati. Thank you. So this is the... Now, what gives rise to that illusion of duality is the icha and the dvesha, right? Icha desha samutena. You have two instrumentals there. By means of the desire and the hate, you know, which we carry forward birth after birth in our mind, right? The delusion of good and bad and dualities in this world comes up. It makes sense, right? And all living beings, sarvabhuta kantaya, sarge means created, either when we're born every time, or when we come into this world, you know, after being in Mahavishnu's, you know. So then comes the remedy. Pantakatam papa. Jananam punyakamnam te dvandamohani magda bhajante mam dhudavata. So those who are finished with sinful life and only are doing punya, this means bhakti punya, in other words, devotional activities. Te dvandva mohani magda. They can be free from the delusion of duality. Because you're through with the icha and dvesha. What you want is solely and wholly what Krishna wants, even if that's not pleasing to my senses. And what I don't want is solely and wholly what Krishna doesn't want, even if it's very pleasing to my senses. That's called rising above the duality. That we can get rid of the dualities of delusion. Yeah.
So then that verse, the punya there is specific to, it's like spiritual punya.
Yes, it's bhaktyun mukhi. Yes. It's krita punya punja. It's like Prabhupada talks about the coward boys who amassed heaps of pious credits so that they could play with Krishna. Clearly, that's not material punya.
Yeah, I was wondering because how does that? It's just another end of the papa of the sinful activities.
But this is it's not pious activities. It's activities in devotional service. All glories to Prabhupada.